coming to you from my apartment that doubles as a podcast recording studio. This is What Should I Do With My Life with Steph Horowitz. I'm Steph Horowitz. Thanks for joining me. This podcast is about how none of us know what we're doing. None of us have it figured out. No matter if you seem like you have it all together, you really don't, so be honest. We're going to talk about real stories from real people, their experiences, how they're figuring it out. From career pivots to being in the same industry for 40 years, we're going to hash this thing out so we can all find more meaning and passion in our work and day-to-days. Hi, everyone. Today we are joined by Stephanie Lee, the one and only. Stephanie is the CEO and founder of Self-Made, an emotional well-being brand whose mission is to create a radical self-love movement for all of us to build our own self-worth story. From the makeup counter at MAC Cosmetics to the East Wing of the White House working with First Lady Michelle Obama, the themes of creativity, impact, taking risks, and the greater good are constant and interwoven in Stephanie's story. Stephanie shares about the big yet complex role the beauty industry has played in her life, the constant work she did and does, and that we should all be doing, to maintain her own mental health, why she quit her job to travel the world, and the genesis of Self-Made. Self-Made truly leads by example. There's nothing like this world ecosystem that is Self-Made. I can't wait for you to hear Stephanie's story.
Hi. I've like 40 million screens.
Oh my God. Yeah, you do have a lot of screens.
Yeah. So not only do I have like multiple screens, I also have like one of those conference thingies. So like I have like the internal speakers and the conference thingy because no one can ever hear me and I can never hear them. And then I have the AirPod. It's a thing.
You're so, a CEO. So.
Well, so it's like
nice to meet you. Oh my God.
Yes. Yes.
So what were you going to say?
And you know.
Yes. Go ahead. No, you go. We're going to say the same thing.
Sophia. Okay, gotcha. Did you meet her while she was out there, like kibbutzing around or? Okay.
She was doing all the things. That's how I got to you, which is crazy. You're like my celebrity interview because.
Oh, that's funny.
Is this so fun and flat? You're my Beyonce, Stephanie. No, for real. Let me just say it. Because she liked a thing of you on Business Insider. There was an article on you and I saw she liked it. And I was like, who is this? I need to meet her. I need to talk to her. She's perfect for the podcast. I feel like we could talk for years. We're going to dive in, Stephanie. Can you tell us in one sentence, what do you do?
As a person or as an entrepreneur?
However you want to tell me, what do you do in one sentence?
In one sentence. Okay. As a person, I'm definitely like an ideas person that brings those big sky ideas into what hopefully is reality. And then as an entrepreneur, I'm the founder and CEO of Self-Made, which is a brand new personal care and emotional wellness brand. So we use the products in our everyday life and really supercharge them with credible mental health in order to create rituals around our emotional well-being and democratize access to these tools and resources.
Amazing.
So that's 2-3 sentences.
No. Listen, you're the first person who ever came back to that and said, do you mean as a person or my job? And I think that's super important. And we could, you know, have a whole hour long discussion just on that in terms of like how we value ourselves with our work and totally. Our identities. And oh my God, but I have a lot of questions for you. We can circle back to that because I think it's fascinating. I love that you said that. Taking a step back, a bit about your background. So you grew up in the South, your parents had escaped Vietnam. They were starting a new life in America, a new chapter. Can you share a bit about your experience growing up, the impact it had on you? It will tie into Self-Made, which we will talk about.
Huge question, right? I mean, any of us going into therapy or even just like reflecting back on our lives, like the impact of growing up in the South is interesting. Cause I mean, for me as a like kid of the 80s, you know, it's a very black and white life. And as a, you know, Asian person kind of like sticking out as a sore thumb. And the idea I think my parents had as immigrants is survival. You know, they're boat people. So they're refugees lost at sea. My mom was in a boat that was like hijacked by pirates from Thailand. Like both of them went into refugee camps and, you know, they were 18 and 15 years old by themselves, essentially. And so when I was 18 and 15, I was just being a brat, you know, like I want my first car. I want my prom dress. And I think, you know, I wasn't able to fully realize the impact of my parents' journey. but I did internalize it, right? I look back and I'm like, oh God, why do I always work so hard? I don't even know what motivates me. And I know it's my parents' story now. You know, it's that internalized message of like resilience and like ability to survive and assimilate. Were basically at the forefront of my childhood, you know, and my parents, as most immigrant parents do, work so hard to provide a life that they never had. And it wasn't until my 30s and doing a trip around the world and with this business and lots of therapy did I even actually understand, what they've done for me and that privilege that comes along with it. And it's been incredible because, you know, at first I felt privilege guilt, you know, like, oh my God, like I get to do this stuff. I get to like seek out what I want to do. And I'm sure we'll talk about passion and inspiration, but that was something that was a part of the journey for me. But, you know, it was, to me, the question came to be, how do I make impact with the privilege that I have? And that comes from my parents and that comes from my upbringing, even though there's like dark sides to it and there are light sides to it, you know?
There's a lot I want
to
say and respond to that. And everything you're saying is, it's so true and makes so much sense when we're thinking of immigrants and their children and generational traumas that are passed on and not even realizing you're carrying that and what that means. And also in my therapy experience, like my grandma survived the Holocaust. So you think, okay, so I'm removed. My parents are children of Holocaust survivors. And, you know, of course everyone's experience is different, but in terms of like do succeed, immigrant success story.
Yes.
Like, you know, me feeling like I always need to be doing something. Well, cause that's what I was seeing around me. And why?
Absolutely.
You need to, whether it's, you know, a guilt or this in immense amount of pressure. So I can imagine that growing up and dealing with that and maybe not understanding it completely and then having to hash through it was probably, well, first of all, of course, necessary just to even be able to understand it. But with that in mind, was the American dream also a really big element? Did you feel this pressure to be this success story?
It's funny because like I look back on it and I'm like, it did feel like pressure, but during it, it doesn't feel like pressure. It's just kind of like, you just got to do it, you know, and that comes from that immigrant mindset. But to tell you the truth, like when I was growing up, I didn't know people that went to like Harvard or Yale. I didn't know people that went to the White House. I didn't know anybody that went beyond. And so that's why podcasts like yours and representation matter so much. Even what you were talking about just a moment ago, like role modeling, seeing people role model the possibility of what you can do is really critical. So for me, you know, it's just a matter of following how I feel, which I didn't recognize during that time. And I think also as a young person being a little naive that it's like, of course I can do anything in the world, right? Like the world is limitless and my possibilities should not be limited because of that. And then you think about everything like society, racial issues, all those things on top of it, that's where the conflict comes from. But I think with me, it's like the Obama campaign came to town during the primaries when I was in college. I instantly was compelled to do something about it because of the message, right? And what it meant for young people in our future. I didn't know that you could work on the campaign and go to the White House. You know, that those were the things of like, I feel really compelled to do this. There's a mission here that I feel passionate about, which was really important for me to follow, which was in direct conflict with the fact that my mom wanted me to be a doctor or a lawyer. You know what I mean? And so for me, it's about like, really learning to trust in myself, which is not a perfect process at all. So really learning to trust that feeling and know that feeling no matter what, like I will figure it out, you know, and trusting in that. And in terms of the American dream, you know, it's really funny because like now I see it. Now I see how it kind of like that subtle messaging, subtle and not so subtle messaging, right? Like white, you know, house, white picket fence, all that stuff. But for me, and as a kid of immigrants, you know, the U.S. has been, for my parents' storytelling, the place where you can come from nothing and be something. And they did that. And so, you know, even when my dad was trying to get, he was the first one to come over from Vietnam. When he was trying to get his family over, he saw Senator Ted Kennedy in something, right? And it wasn't even his senator, and wrote to him asking for help to bring his family over. The senator's office sent the letter to the right constituent office, and they ended up helping my dad. And so that's incredible for him as an immigrant to have that type of access and ability to do something for his own family in this country. And I have two younger brothers, and we've been able to grow and thrive and all of the above. And I think, you know, the American dream is that, but it's also just changed so much with our generation and even Gen Z's generation, where, you know, time is a luxury now. You know, the emotional well-being and that health and wellness there is the more of the dream than it's ever been now, right? I forget the stat, but I think it's about 70% of Gen Z are actually prioritizing their mental health. And that is more than any generation beforehand, you know? And so that's pretty incredible. And time, like I said, for time is a luxury. What do we do with that time? How do we spend it with ourselves? And how do we actually drive towards what fills us up?
There's so much I want to unpack here. You were saying how your dad had this kind of, not idealism, because he really made it happen with Senator Kennedy. And then, so then on the one hand, you'd think like, wow, you ending up working for the Obama administration really is this kind of full circle definition of realizing a dream. And then you also said that it went a bit against what your mom had been pushing you of, like, a steady, stable career with a, you'll always have work versus going after your passion. And it's this mix.
It totally is a mix. I remember joining the campaign, and I had gotten into a graduate program, and my dad and I kind of got in a fight because I was like, I really want to do the campaign. I feel so compelled, like heart forward compelled to do it. And he was like, what? You know, like, you don't even know this person. You've never even met them. And you're going to go to like some random town and sleep on like some random stranger volunteer's couch and do work for them. And I was like, yeah, that's what I want to do. And then when I got called to the campaign, one of the first people I called was my dad, even though I knowing that was kind of like, for him. And he said, you know what, Stephanie, you already know what you want to do. Just follow your heart. And this is back in the day when we didn't have cell phones and we didn't have the GPS on it. And so he bought me like one of those GPS that you stick up on the windshield. I don't know if remember those, but
Magellan.
Magellans or TomToms, exactly. He got me one of those. And that's when I felt most that he believed in me. And then when I went to work at the White House, it was interesting because I'd been working for the Secretary at Housing and Urban Development. We had just celebrated. I mean, that's an optimistic word for what is extremely devastating, but Katrina, which was a huge hurricane that came through New Orleans. And I remember when I went to the White House and my mom was like, what? You're going to leave your job? You know, like the idea to like move that quickly, or, you know, even though it is the White House, there is this level of uncertainty and instability that comes with that movement that my parents couldn't really, you know, understand for themselves, but came to understand and want for me and understand what it meant to me. So yeah, it's totally at odds. And I think my middle brother actually is fulfilling my parents' dreams in the whole medical field. So I'm fine.
He's taking care of it. You can do your thing. He'll do his thing. He's checking that box. Taking leaps is a regular thing for you. Making, you know, and everyone listening is really going to understand more and more as this conversation goes, this is like a natural thing for you to kind of take risks. Before you joined the Obama campaign, you were working at MAC Cosmetics. You were a product specialist, makeup artist, and then you just left the job. And I just wanted to take a step back about MAC, and I wanted to know, was being in the beauty industry something you thought long-term, this is what I want to do, or you had a passion?
That's a good question. I actually worked at MAC at the counter when I was in college. And my mom is a hairdresser. So while my dad, you know, as an immigrant came over, both of them didn't speak English. My dad went to high school, learned English, community college, and then on to University of Washington to become an engineer. Whereas my mom went into trade school and she became a hairstylist. And so I remember growing up, like 4 or 5 years old, dancing in the aisles of a hair salon, you know, or getting paid $5 to sweep up hair and visiting the nail manicurist and getting daisies painted on my fingernails. You know, while it wasn't a conscious decision, it's so obvious about how much my mother's influence is. You know, she is an incredibly strong, opinionated person to a fault sometimes, and also just incredibly resilient and creative and clever, you know? And so those are the things I think I carry forth. But again, without going to therapy and without my mom actually joining me in therapy, I couldn't see those things because I couldn't see her as a human being. I just saw her as mom. So that was really interesting. So it's very clear to me now, retrospectively, how much my mom influenced that creativity and like really cultivated it. You know, she would buy me books on art, take me to painting, and, you know, whereas my dad was the one that was like more like pushing me to be independent and explore, my mom was really like, she used to sew Halloween costumes and dresses and like teach me how to sew at five, you know, and really about that like hands-on tactical, like create from nothing. And that has been thematic for me. It's doing someone's makeup in a blank canvas to creating an event to creating a product with later on when I finally go. But interestingly enough, like when I graduated college was when the first recession happened, 2008. And that was a really devastating time across the board economically. You know, people were losing jobs. And as a new graduate, I kind of was like, shit, what am I going to do? Like, I liked the idea of fashion and beauty, but I grew up in like North Carolina, where that is definitely not a hot spot. So I even was like, maybe I'll go into pharmaceutical sales. I don't know. And it was just by chance to have joined the Obama campaign. And so that pivot, while seemingly unrelated, was related in the sense that I was so young that you can do anything at that point and like stumble and fall and learn from it.
Yeah, it's so true what you said about creating and that being kind of a theme in your life, like taking nothing and making it into something. And it really kind of embodies your family's story and starting anew and building from scratch. And you said your dad going to school, becoming an engineer, and your mom working, and your story and everything you're doing. So you started as a field organizer on the Obama campaign. You were in the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. And then you spend 3 years working with the First Lady, Mrs. Obama. This is wild. I mean, you were like, I'm just going to go and join the campaign and I'm into this. And holy F, like that's what happened. Many a question, but the first one too is, what was a typical day like? I imagine it was quite dynamic, but also, did you ever think, like, who am I to be doing this right now? Or why am I here? Or what do they see in me? Because I feel like if I was in that situation, I'd be like, what the hell am I doing here? Who thinks I should be here? Like, I shouldn't be here. I don't know. Who am I?
Yeah, to the last question, less so, right? It's, again, part of that naivety. And I think, you know, like, even President Obama, when he was president-elect, so before he got into the White House, was like really paid tribute to the young folks working, because he's like, you didn't know that a Black man couldn't be president, or it wouldn't be all those things. And so like, I never thought that, right? Like, I'm like, of course. And I think that same mindset was, I adopted it and was also part of like the office culture of like, of course we can. So I don't think I felt that, but I naturally have felt like I am the youngest of whatever group I'm doing and moving things forward. So that didn't feel weird to me in terms of like imposter syndrome, which we encounter a lot, right? As women, and like that societal pressure to be. So I didn't necessarily feel that. It actually felt empowering. Like, I'm a young person that has energy and drive, and I feel committed to a mission. So why not keep going? So I think that is a superpower piece of like thinking on the other side of the coin, rather than, I think some folks would be like, I'm so young, I know nothing. To me, I was like, I'm so young that I have so much to learn. Let's do this. So every day in the White House, I mean, again, super different. Something that is ritualistic about going to the White House is that I would work in the East Wing. So, you know, like the TV shows is like West Wing, that's where the president is, that's where all the action is. The East Wing is, I think, calmer. It's on the obvious east side. And so the gate is less used by folks. And you see the same Secret Service people. So you say, hi, how's your weekend? you scan in, you go through the magnetometers every single day, and then walk into the East Wing. And then I walked to upstairs, the second floor, to my office all the way down in the hall. And so I think, you know, that ritualistic thing about like saying hi and having, you know, that routine was really lovely because it kind of felt like you're all in it together. And the days again are very different, whether the First Lady was traveling or we were working on a particular program or initiative. And I got to really help to project manage the First Lady's first book, which was American Grown. So for any of you gardening fanatics out there, I got to name it and work on that with the publisher. And so like the cool thing about the First Lady is that she was always pushing the envelope on what we could do and really about how do we speak to the people that need it the most in a way they've never been spoken to before. And I think that's incredibly important, especially as today and what I'm doing now, the world is just so saturated and there are people that are being left out of the conversation. So how do we create a whole different table in order to really be able to have the conversations that matter to the people that need it the most?
Some of the things that you said that really go along with that kind of work was creating and this free-spiritedness of let's do it. This concept of we're in it together and this concept of the greater good.
Yeah, themes of my life in which, again, like therapy and taking the time with myself, you know, especially coming out of my 20s, right? Like 20s, you're just making mistakes left and right. Like you can't catch a break, you know? And I was so happy to get to 30s because I was like, oh, I have a moment to reflect on it. And as painful as that was, like it was so helpful to understand what is my path? What are the themes that are, you know, my guiding light of my life and my purpose here? Cause it's not like, oh, I'm passionate about art. It's like, what are the themes I'm passionate about, which is impact on people, creating. And so to me, if you can figure out what are the themes of your life and create that path, you may veer off the path, which is totally cool. I appreciate a veer off in an alleyway, but you can always come back to the path. And so therefore you cannot go wrong, as long as it's authentically created with yourself.
Boom. That is beautiful. Anyone can kind of relate to that and take that and think, what's the theme of my life? And what does that look like? Of course, you talked about the role therapy played in kind of coming to some of these groundbreaking conclusions and understandings. And after you worked at the White House, you ended up working at Estee Lauder in corporate. And then at a certain point, you dealt with a personal mental health crisis. So I would love to hear a bit more about the role that therapy played in your journey and what has come of that.
Well, it's interesting because I never wanted to go to therapy. It's like one of those things that's like, oh, therapy is great for you guys, friends, whoever. But for myself, you know, there was a level of vulnerability that I was so afraid to engage in. If I speak it out loud, that means I have to deal with it. And like, I used my intellectualism as a way to avoid. I felt so safe in work. I didn't even know how to spend time with myself. And so when I was working at MAC Cosmetics, I really loved it. Cause again, thematically I was, you know, I love being challenged and learning. And so coming at mid-level management and kind of taking on what, you know, our years of people's development and creating products was really interesting to me. Simultaneously, my ex-husband had an affair with our neighbor four doors down. And you know, while that is not the crisis, that is a symptom of the fact that I, as a woman of color, never really had tools, resources, or community around my emotional well-being. We don't talk about it. I never heard stories about it. I didn't see my parents role model it. I just really couldn't understand. Luckily, I was already in therapy, couples therapy with my ex-husband when I found out, and I started going by myself. Because it was kind of like an awakening to me. Like when your reality is so different from your expectation, that meeting point, that conflict is heartbreak. I was so heartbroken. How the hell did I come here? How did I get here? And I also had to really uncover like, oh my God, I was actually miserable. And I did about 3 years of really intense therapy. And in my darkest days, like couldn't do the dishes, couldn't put up, you know, I moved to a new place. I couldn't put up the shower curtain. And I just remember like right now, I just have to figure out how to take care of myself. And so sitting in, you know, beauty, but also learning about my self-worth and how to actually take care of myself in therapy were in two different and very conflicting messages. So within beauty, you know, and this is not, and beauty and products, so not relegated to a specific brand, but it's all about, if you buy this, you will feel good. That pimple or flaw that society has deemed is not good enough. So buy this so you can cover it up and feel better about yourself. That's the world I was living in, and really glorifying influencers that essentially all looked the same. Meanwhile, in therapy, sometimes going 3 to 4 times a week, you know, or 2 times a week on a regular basis, because I was really knee deep in that self-exploration, I was learning the baby steps on how to even figure out my self-worth. I didn't even know step one. And then also, how do I take care of myself? Which in part was asking for help. So my therapist would say, well, if you can't wash your dishes, why don't you ask a friend to help come over because you're not feeling well? That requires an immense amount of vulnerability to even do that. And I said to her, and I was like, oh God, well, I can't help them even though they're helping me, right? So that transactional mindset. And she said, right now, you just need to ask for help and be vulnerable. Then later, when you feel healthier, you can help them and repay them. But right now, you need to learn to take care of yourself. So recognizing that self-care isn't in a jar, it's not a bubble bath. It is truly those things that we need to do as humans to like fill ourselves up. Those two things were in such direct conflict fundamentally that I was like, there's something wrong here. And so while I enjoyed working for MAC, because again, harkened to the days that I worked on the counter and loved it and felt belonging because of their mantra of like all ages, all sexes, all races, which is now all genders instead of sexes, it wasn't enough. There needs to be fundamental change about women and how we see ourselves and how we have relationships with ourselves. So I kind of was like, screw it. I'm going to go travel the world. And that took a lot of, you know, self-work to even let go of like the safety net of a paycheck or what other people expected of me.
So much of what we're talking about is this concept of being a role model and role modeling. And it really feels like you're taking your firsthand life experiences and putting them out there really to be a role model in all, you know, in so many different ways, whether it's addressing mental health needs, whether it's addressing self-worth, asking for help, saying you need help. I understand from listening to your interview on the Bossed Up podcast and reading a bit that you kind of went on this trip and you ended up talking to hundreds of women about their experiences, about mental health. I'm curious, was that your intention of the trip? Did you go with this mission and purpose? Like, I'm going to go on this trip. I'm going to hear these stories. I'm going to have these conversations. Did it happen organically?
It happened organically, I think, because of the person I became, right? When you were talking about, you know, living this life of like being vulnerable and all the things, like I really thought about this trip as the ultimate reckoning, right? To put myself out in the world, not just a country, the world by myself is the most vulnerable one could possibly get. And I have always loved traveling. Anytime traveling is about wonderment and learning and curiosity, and it stokes that fire and really inspires me. For me, it was that mental health reckoning where I wanted to be the most vulnerable I've ever been, meeting new people by myself, whatever it might be, situations, all that stuff. I wanted to lean into as much uncertainty as possible, which is a lot for someone who is a planner or was a planner, less so today. But, you know, I planned the first 3 months and then I was like, we'll see what happens when I get there. Also, I wanted to really learn how to take care of myself. The US is incredibly convenient. It is, you know, you go to the grocery store, your food is wrapped up in the nice little package and you take it home. The privilege that we experience in the Western world is not how the rest of the world lives. And so it was incredible to me to have the privilege to be able to experience those things, because taking care of yourself means making decisions for yourself, looking out for your safety, when you need to eat, what happened out of that, and just getting to know people in the same way that we're getting to know each other now is just the stories. And it was really incredible to hear people's stories, because I think folks are just ready to talk about it. they're, you know, and when you go traveling, most people are searching for something. It is when they're their most vulnerable. And so there is that common thread of like wonderment and like, and searching that connects us all. And I've never felt more of a sense of belonging than I did traveling, which is pretty incredible. And something that I bring to self-made, that vulnerability and understanding like these stories and seeing ourselves in other people's stories is what creates empathy. And like you doing this at podcast, figuring out and talking to people and sharing their stories, seeing other people like in what they're doing is inspiring. And it's incredible because that sameness is what connects us to the larger humanity, right? We all feel joy, excitement, fear, loneliness, all of the above. And I think, yes, while we celebrate our differences, that sameness is really powerful because it's so validating. So that's kind of like how it happened. And while I can't actually count hundreds per se, because that's a lot of chatting, but I did talk to a lot of people across the world. It was a gift. And I think any woman should travel by themselves, even for a weekend.
I couldn't agree more. I feel like when you go travel by yourself, I have traveled by myself as well. I did Southeast Asia trip by myself for 5 weeks. Love. And I'm also a planner. And then I'm like, okay, I'm going alone. It is so true what you're saying, because it takes you back to the basics. Okay, I'm in charge of my day. Like, do I go here? Do I go there? Do I lay around all day? Should I go to drink? Should I talk to this person in the hostel? What am I? Totally. It is like it's a very different way of living. You do feel very alive and you feel very vulnerable. I felt so lonely often. I was like, what the hell is going on? I'm here alone. I don't know anyone. I'm sitting and eating alone. I'm walking alone. I've never been physically alone like this in my entire life.
Which I think is hard nowadays, right? Like obviously given what's going on, but like even with you saying like being completely alone, loneliness is a huge reason why people go to therapy and a huge reason why people feel disconnected. And even in Japan, I think it's like an epidemic, you know, for their older or elderly populations. Mm. But with COVID, this is the first time in terms of a global trauma that we've been forced to slow down and be alone with ourselves. And so the coping mechanisms that you had before don't really apply. And so what are people doing with their time? And, you know, a lot of friends and people I've been talking to is really doubling down and questioning on like, what's the quality of my life? What do I want it to be? And, you know, I luckily was able to like figure that out because of my trip and my experiences before COVID, and started self-made right before COVID started. But it was, again, a time where like it accelerated the need for what we're doing here in terms of democratizing resources and access to mental health. And that's even with starting like with the name of our product. The first step, baby step into knowing your emotional self is expanding your emotional vocabulary. So, you know, our first product was Secure Attachment. It has to do with attachment styles. So how do we create healthy relationships, truly bond and create emotional boundaries? It's a beautiful, beautiful serum. And it also has a digital tool that is paired with it. So you can care for yourself inside out. We developed it with mental health experts who are incredible in terms of working with real people and the communities of color, rather than sitting in a really beautifully furnished, you know, high building office. And then we are actually coming out with True Grit Resilience Scrub. So grit really speaking to the exfoliation part of it, but really about what's the difference between grit and resilience. You know, I think for so long, prior to like emotional well-being and mental health being top of mind, resilience looked like grinning and bearing, like don't show your emotions or weakness, just push through it. And especially for communities of color where resilience is expected, like the strong Black woman. And that's where it actually gets dangerous. You know, the way that we see resilience from an emotional perspective is the ability to fall, ask for help, figure out what you need, be vulnerable, ask for help, get back up and try again, which is very different from the avoidance and the kind of like power through message that, you know, you and I probably have gotten for a number of years. Don't cry at work, go to the bathroom and cry, you know, like all those things. It doesn't allow us to be humans and show up as we are.
It's so true what you said, how you were kind of laughing, like, well, we kicked off right before COVID and this is a very important time for self-made and for people to know what self-made is. So just to take it back a notch, first of all, I ordered a secure attachment. I ordered it to my parents' house, and I'll be in America this summer. So I'm going to get it. So I'm very, very excited. Oh, and obviously I'll tell you, but self-made is really mixing together a few different elements. It's self-care, it's self-love, it's a physical product. There's a digital community with resources. It's a very comprehensive A to Z kind of, I don't know, it's not a service, it's not a product. What is it? And how did you know what ingredients needed to be included in this?
So I guess you could just call it an ecosystem. You just step into it, right? And I think that's the thing is like with us in terms of these products, whether it's digital or physical, no one lives their life just in the physical world. No one just lives their lives in the digital world. So we are really about meeting people where they already are. Same with the way that we think about our physical products. You know, we have a face product, we have a scalp and body product. So like from going from your vanity, I want to be there. I want to be in your shower. I want to be in your nightstand, because that's how often we should consider our mental and emotional well-being. It just shouldn't be relegated to 45 minutes with a therapist or in a talk therapy app or a nighttime cry. It is, should be what woven into every moment of your day. In terms of the ingredients, you know, we can look at that question in two ways. There's ingredients of like the business itself. Part of, you know, my angst with the current beauty market is like this idea that self-love can be anything. It could be a silk robe. It could be a cappuccino. It could be a bath. And that's actually, when you look through this emotional well-being and mental health lens, it really is about self-worth and self-trust. So let's not dilute it as much as it's already been diluted. And the elements for self-love within our brand is self-care, true self-care, not self-maintenance, self-care, putting the gas in the car, not waxing the car or whatever people do with your cars. Self-awareness, truly like getting to know yourself, honestly getting to know yourself, and emotional integrity, not emotional intelligence. Emotional integrity is one step beyond that. It's to be able to show up as you are without the fear of judgment. So each piece of that formula actually has a product related to it. So self-care, learning how to care for ourselves through the physical product. Self-touch is so important to our emotional well-being. Taking those moments of like really taking care of ourselves when you're putting, you know, women already think they're taking care of themselves when they're putting on a serum or a face mask or whatever it might be. So injecting it with credible mental health. That's true self-care for us. Self-awareness, period, around the community piece, right? Seeing yourself in each other's stories, being able to ask yourself these questions. And that is our digital tool. It's 21 days of questions to ask yourself and explore around whatever product is associated with. So for secure attachment, it's your attachment style. What do your relationships look like? What do they look like with yourself? How are they role modeled? How do you show love? How do you give love? How do you receive love? All of those things. For resilience scrub that we're coming out with tomorrow, it's about how do you recognize your own resilience? How do you see it individually, societally, and communally? And these are all about, again, asking the right questions. There's so much guru authority stuff out there, like someone telling you, you should do this, you should do X, you should do Y, you should do Z. But as you and I know through our own therapy, the only amazing connections we've ever made for ourselves are with ourselves, not because someone told us. So that's part of it. And that emotional integrity is to show up in that community as yourself. So we have a lot of community programming, like the event we have tonight around resilience. We're actually piloting with our digital tool, kind of almost like a book club version of it, so that you can actually show up and share with others. Kind of like, I mean, this is too much of a label, but like group therapy, right? Like sharing with each other, because that even perceived support from a community helps further on healing. And it's really bringing that aspect to what connection really looks like if we're vulnerable, and how do you create brave and safe spaces to do that?
There's nothing like it. And we talked about, of course, the pandemic, and there was a lot this year, of course, with police brutality, a huge rise in hate crimes against Asian Americans, racism, the terrible shooting and terrorist attack that happened last week in Atlanta. And I'm wondering if it's affecting your work and what self-made means to you, or what you hope it will be and what it could be for your customers.
Hey, thank you for bringing that up. I don't think any brand or company can any longer stand on the sidelines. There's too much going on in the world. And I know that consumers, especially Gen Z consumers, are demanding more action financially, operationally, transparency like you've never seen before. And so it is now a threshold criteria to take a stand. Yes, it affected work in the sense for me, I had been a bit numb to like all the crimes leading up to it because it's scary. You know, there's not one beauty product I can wear, change, put on to even look any different from what I was born as. And that is someone with almond eyes and dark hair and brown skin, and I'm clearly Asian, you know? And so for me, it was really difficult because we celebrate that, you know, and we celebrate lived experiences. And we also know that trauma and not like big T's, little T's exist on a daily basis for people in our community and our consumers and people who haven't even discovered self-made. And so for us, it's not about how can we capitalize off of this, but more so, how can we take a moment to pause and figure out where we can make impact? You know, I saw a lot of resources going out. I saw a lot of like donate here's going out. I think those are great. But what I've recognized through this journey is that we shame others for the same shame we feel. We inflict pain for the same pain we feel inside. And people are hurting. You know, people of color and color communities of color are hurting and inflicting that pain on each other because that is the systemic racism at play, you know? And so for me, it's really about how do we do the work ourselves to understand that pain and that shame so we can regulate that and not inflict it in other people? You know, how do we build those skill sets, emotional skill sets, to understand our pain before we inflict it on other people? So that's one thing. And then the other thing, just similar to you, is sharing people's stories. Like we put up a couple posts, one being, you know, mine and other folks within the AAPI community, doing our kind of reckoning with this. We tend to be a very silent community. Again, talking about that like idea of resilience, like we're just quiet and we keep going. It is not something that we typically speak out loud about, but it's gotten to this point that people are forced to speak out loud because it is so painful. And I'm married, my partner, he's a white guy from the UK. And so really not understanding the race relations of this country until we started dating and I started talking about white supremacy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all of the incidents that have happened over the past year, especially during COVID, he's become his own ally and activist. And, you know, he is a middle child, or not middle child, but he's like a mediator. He's a people pleaser. So he's like, oh, if we do this, then this person will be okay. And this will be happy, this community, blah, blah. I like literally put my hand up and I said, don't talk to me, talk to your white friends. And so sharing stories about our lived experiences of the racism that we experience, even granularly, for me, I see women that look like me in nail salons. You know what I mean? I see women like me serving me food. Like I could easily be that as I am the person that's sitting in front of you having this chat about this business that I've created. You know, and it's these stories again that connect us and grow that empathy. And so how can we keep on making space for those who've never really felt like they've had space before? And that extends to the API community, Latina, Black, you know, all communities that haven't typically had a seat at the table. Also knowing that this is a work in progress kind of thing. I've been sitting and watching, you know, like, is this a flash in the pan or does this have legs? And I know that's part of my cynicism, just based on my experience, whether I've been bullied when I was younger and told to go back to China, or, you know, people have like made slant eyes at me. I think there's a time for healing, and hopefully with collective voices and stories, we can make that change.
You're an ambassador for this message. Self-Made is an ambassador for this and what this is and what this means. If we were to hang out in 3 years and I saw you and you were so happy and self-made, whatever, what happened?
Oh gosh. Well, big sky ideal is that we really empower folks to be their own mental health activists and for the greater good. So that means advocating for themselves, advocating for the communities, society. So I think that's something in terms of seeing people collectively advocate for themselves in this way would be really cool. I think that's my main North Star, to tell you the truth. And really driving this business is the fact that, you know, I don't know what's good for you. I never will tell you what's good for you, but I might ask you the questions to help have a conversation of what you think might be good for you. So the idea is that we're not building this for you, we're building it with you. And so every single person that I touch and our team touches, and we have a junior advisory board of 8 incredible women, and I think we're growing that for this next year. And these are Gen Zers who are unbucketable people and women. You know, they can love politics and they can love fashion. They can love, you know, like sneakers and nail art, and they can also love activism or policy. And so we're multifaceted beings. And so lifting up the fact that we can be those people and want to be those people and is really important. And that's the people I want to invite Self-Made on their journey rather than the other way around.
Okay, you have to go. We have to go. You have to go.
Yeah.
One piece of advice for people who don't know what to do with their lives.
Oh my gosh, just say yes. I mean, I have a whole story around, you know, the idea of passion. And I'm like, bless every single person who was born from their mother's womb with the idea of what they feel passionate about. For the rest of us who had no fucking clue, like, it takes work. And part of that work is not being paralyzed by it, but by just doing. The moment you step forth and say yes is the moment you decide whether or not you like this or not. Do what inspires you. Do what scares you. Because if it scares you, that means you're doing something new. And you can always decide you don't like it and just pivot.
Amazing. That was the best thing ever. Where can people follow you? Where can people follow you? See where you're up to? Follow Self-Made.
I would rather you follow Self-Made because my own followership has to do with just my dog. So you can,
I'm going to follow you.
Do it. It's just my dog or pictures of flowers. Cause that's what brings me joy. You can follow Self-Made in this journey of the incredible people who are wanting to make an impact within our emotional and mental health at beselfmade.co on Instagram, or just visit our website, which I actually highly suggest because we have this incredible digital zine of folks who've submitted their own stories and lived experiences. You can view and read and see our interactive anthem video at beselfmade.co, not com. For any of your followers or friends, life15 as a discount code for anything on the website. So
links will be in the show notes. Thanks okay. A million. Thank you so much, Stephanie. I appreciate
All right,
it.
We'll chat
Have
later.
A great day.
Bye.
Hi, everyone. So many great insights from this talk with Stephanie. The first thing that stuck out to me when I asked her about being in the White House and if she had feelings of imposter syndrome or what am I doing here, she was talking about this kind of naivety, being so young. It wasn't even a thought to think, oh, I shouldn't be here. Rather, I'm so young. There's so much I can do. I have so much energy. I have so much to learn. I think we should all try to embrace this kind of attitude. It'll make us more daring, willing to take risks, and more confident. I love how Stephanie really has figured out the themes of her life to create, making an impact, the greater good. We should all be more aware of these patterns, be more in tune of the themes of our own lives. I think it can only help guide us on our way. And of course, the power of a story. Stephanie's story, her journey, her ups and downs, the twists and turns, dealing with mental health. Her story is not just her story. Her story has become a tool and a vehicle to empower and help others through Self-Made. Check out the show notes to follow Stephanie and Self-Made.